You're listening to Brazen Bookworm's Unrighteous Reading Rebellion, a reform book snob's journey and musings through all things romance. Some language may not be safe for all ears. Frequent use of sarcasm may occur. Hey, bookworms, welcome back. So it's September 1st, and we are nearing the last third of the year. I had a little bit of trouble with that this morning, waking up and realizing, oh, it's September. We are way more than halfway through the year, and I'm starting to see a lot of posts about reading streaks and people checking in on their reading goals. So it got me to wondering about reading goals and reading streaks and how many people set reading goals for the year and what constitutes a book within the reading goal. So, you know, I'm online a lot and I'm always checking out posts and things start to gel in my brain about, sounds like something I should discuss with my bookworms. And I set reading goals now, but this is a relatively new thing for me. In fact, and there's Her Majesty making her presence known. It wouldn't be a podcast without the dog's chimes. So anyway, I didn't really set reading goals or track my reading until last year. And I started last year because that's when somebody finally clued me in about the Kindle Reading Insights in the app. And I was like, oh, look at that. It tracks what you read. It logs your books. And when I started doing more and more reviews and I started logging them on Goodreads, I started to keep track of things there as well. And then I would compare what's on Goodreads to what's on my Kindle list. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. So it'll really give me a full total of everything that I'm reading. So every now and then I forget to check the numbers. They're just not in my head all the time. And I won't check them for a while. And then someone will post about how their numbers in their Kindle Insights, their reading insights, got wiped out because they were traveling and they had their phone in airplane mode, or they were reading a paperback and they didn't dive into something on their Kindle, or there was a glitch or something. And then I'm like, ooh, I got to hop over and see, has my counter reset? And yesterday, when I checked on it after someone posted that theirs had reset, I was like, okay, this is something really, really cool. And the cool part wasn't how many books, it was that I have been reading for 800 days in a row. And that to me is a pretty interesting streak. And even numbers like that make me very happy. So 128 weeks in a row and 800 days in a row, which was pretty cool. And I was like, okay, I can see how I would get really kind of pissed off if I had this huge streak going and then all of a sudden all of my numbers were wiped out. So, you know, my heart rate elevated a little bit and I ran over to see it and I was happy to see that it was still there. But as I was putting a post together about it, it really did feel like something I wanted to chat with you guys. And I got some really cool feedback on the post itself, everywhere from people saying that they love to watch that because it confirms to them that they're doing something every day for themselves. Because a lot of us are super, super busy all the time. And when we can look at our reading stats and say, wow, I've read every day for this long, or I've read at least one day for this many weeks in a row, it confirms to us that we are taking time to do exactly something for us, which is sitting down to read. And other people said that they don't like to track them because they either get really super competitive with themselves or they're so tied to those numbers that they forget the reason they're reading. And I thought that was really deep also, because how many times do you do something just so that you can get the number on it? And it makes it such a competition that it's no longer fun. I did that with my Fitbit for a while. I was in such a state of having to make sure I got to a certain number of steps that I was driving myself crazy and stressing myself out trying to get to the number of steps, totally ignoring the fact that sometimes I just needed to rest, or I had done some other kind of workout that didn't count towards the steps. But I was so keyed in on that number that it became a stressor in and of itself. And I completely understand when someone says, I don't want reading to be stressful, so I don't want to look at those numbers, because if I pay attention to the numbers, it will make reading something that I have to do versus reading is something that I want to do. And I understand that so well. So I see both sides of it. So then I started to think about, you know, why are the streaks so important, and how does somebody value the streaks and the numbers of books that they've read? So whether you're talking about how many books you've read in your reading goal, or how many days in a row you've read, or how many weeks in a row you've read, I started to kind of look into this and think about this, got in some really cool conversations about why we get frustrated and why we get upset about watching numbers like that when they're doing great and then they're all of a sudden gone, or getting frustrated and upset with ourselves because we're putting too much emphasis on it. And another thing that came up that was really interesting in the discussion was not only the number of days and the number of weeks that people have been reading, but the number of books. And there was a little bit of a competitive edge to some of the comments, not on mine, but on others that I've seen, that really made me stop to think about how we read, why we read, what we read, how we set our goals, and how we meet our goals. So going past the how long you've been reading for and getting into the lists of books you've read, I think is a kind of on the same vein, but a bit different. And that's more of what I wanted to dive into, of not that you've read every day for so long or you've read so many weeks in a row, but how many books we're reading and why we set these goals for ourselves if we do set our goals, and how we reach them and how we record them. Because I feel that there's something very valuable in recording progress, and there's something very valuable in recording success, and something very valuable in seeing the things that you've done on some form of a list, a counter, paper, whatever. So I'm curious, one, about how you record what you read and what you count in that. You know, we talk a lot about our overflowing TBRs, about how many books are on there that we're never going to read. And we joke about it. You know, I've named mine Audrey 2 because I keep feeding it and it keeps growing and demanding more and more, but it's becoming unmanageable and unwieldy. And eventually Audrey 2 is just going to take over everything in my world. And that'll be the end of that, unless I pare it down a little bit, which then makes Audrey 2 mad. But we're not going there today. We're talking about the other side, which is, what about your already reads? How do you keep track of what you've already read? And what do you count in that number? What's your go-to method to record the books you've already consumed, the things you've already fed to your brain? There's so many different ways out there, and I actually have a couple of different ways. So Kindle Insights does track what I've read. So does Goodreads, because I put things on there. And then I have a bullet journal that I keep track of what I've read pictorially with pictures. That's the word, right? Pictorially with pictures. Yeah, that's it. I want to make sure I'm using the right word there. But I take the book covers and I print them out, and then I cut them out, and then I put them in a bullet journal spread for each month. So I'm keeping track of the books I've read based on the covers, because it's a really neat, I think, visual for me to go back and see what I read and listen to that month, because I absolutely do count the audiobooks that I've listened to, whether I've read the physical book or not. Audiobooks are books. We can have this argument in another podcast. I have a feeling we probably will, but I will definitely go with you any day on an argument as far as whether audiobooks are books. They are. Listening to an audiobook is reading. And again, that's a discussion for another day. Getting back on topic, taming the brain squirrels. I like having different methods because, well, one, each one does something different. So there's different things in different places that show my progress in reading in different ways. Kindle Insights is nice because it's right there on the Kindle. And since I do most of my reading on the Kindle, it has everything there, but it does not record paperbacks. And it doesn't record ARCs the way I want them to be recorded, the way I want them to, because I want my ARCs to be recorded. Now, Last year, I noticed that in Kindle Insights, it would have the book cover from the ARC that I read through the Kindle app, but underneath it, it had no details available. And that was fine because the only detail I needed was the cover. That's how I knew I read it, was the cover. And because I'm visual, I could look at the cover. And honestly, even if I didn't remember the title, because sometimes I forget titles, the cover was an instant trigger for me of what the book was about and how I felt about the book. So I liked Kindle Insights for that. But this year I've noticed, instead of putting the book cover with no details, it's a blank gray square or rectangle. It's a blank gray rectangle. And I don't like that because, okay, great. It's a placeholder that shows I read something, but it doesn't show what I read. And I consider ARCs to be reading. I don't understand why they don't count in some people's book, because ARCs are books. It's the full book. And I do a good portion of my reading now through ARCs. Actually, looking back over the last 5 or 6 months or so, there are very few things I have read that have not been through an ARC read. And I want those ARCs to count in my reading progress. I also record things in Goodreads, and I do like Goodreads, and BookBub is another one that I've used more and more recently because it doesn't care what format I'm reading in. It just cares that I read the book. Plus, it kind of spurs me on to write a review. I do write reviews on Amazon, but usually I'm more likely to record a review on Goodreads and BookBub when I'm done, because again, sometimes it's paperback and I'm not reading it on the Kindle. So Goodreads is a really great way, and BookBub are really great ways for me to chronologically store and show what I've been reading and write a review and keep it all in one place. So going back to thinking about the Kindle Insights, it's great because it's right there. And the Goodreads, as much as I do not like to read I don't like to read reviews on Goodreads lately. Yeah, this is another thing for another podcast. I'm going to have to tame the brain squirrels a little bit because some of the reviews on Goodreads lately have been just not kind. So let's table that for another one. But anyway, I like to record the books I read on Goodreads because it does take a more inclusive approach to everything I read versus just what Kindle recognizes as something I've read through its platform. But that did get me to think about what constitutes a read in our reading lives, in our reading journals, in our what am I going to count, what counts, what doesn't count, because some people have some very specific opinions on that. And I'm going to give you mine because I'm curious about yours. I want to know what you guys think about this also. So I'm going to let you into my mind, let you visit and journey with my brain squirrels for a couple minutes in the hopes that it will lead to some thought and discussion about what counts when we read and where do you record that information and how do you record that information. So let's start with ARCs. I am a firm believer that if you are reading an ARC, an advanced reader copy or an advanced review copy, I've seen it referred to both ways, that absolutely 100% counts as something that you've read. For one, it is a near published work. Sometimes authors will change a couple of things in ARCs depending on feedback they get from their readers, but it is a book that has gone through alpha reading, beta reading, editing, and it's on its last step to becoming a fully published work. And I love to read ARCs because I have a little bit of that FOMO. I don't like to miss out on anything. Being an ARC reader kind of ensures that when there are authors I really love to follow, or a brand new author that I have just found out about, if I have a deadline for reading an ARC for them, I know I'm going to read the book. I know it's not going to be shelved on the TBR to be read sometime later and then forgotten about. I work really well within deadlines. Now, sometimes deadlines happen all at once and I get a little stressed out because the month of August was like crickets. I think I had 4 or 5 ARCs to read in August, but after July, where there were 14 in 2 weeks, and now I'm looking at September, where I think there's already 10 that are on my schedule. I was like, okay, wow. So August was a great kind of recovery time frame for ARC reading, but having a book on my schedule to read it for an ARC guarantees I'm going to read it. And when it's an author that I love and I want to make sure I make time for their book, getting it as an ARC for me is gold because I know I'm going to read it. I know not every author does ARCs, and I always add those to my TBR and I work them in because there are authors I love who do not do ARCs and I still want to read their books. But knowing there's an ARC and it's on my Kindle and it has a deadline means I'm absolutely going to read it. And if I'm going to sit down and read this book that is one step away from publication, I am counting it as something I read, plain and simple, because I read it. It's a book. The only reason it's not published yet is because the author is trying to get last minute feedback. Some authors use their ARC readers for just a last set of eyes for proofreading errors. And ARC readers are really valuable for that. So valuable, because I'll tell you, as an editor, there are gremlins in the books that they will get through. I've worked on books with 3 different editors and a proofreader, and things have still gotten through. Nasty, pesky gremlins. And ARC readers will inevitably catch that because they're looking at it with fresh eyes. So the author is able to put out the best possible work because of their ARC team. And I love that. Also, ARCs are great for building up momentum for reviews. I know a lot of people have read books that I've recommended that I've read as an ARC. And then I post about it and they're like, oh, this sounds really good. I want to go and read it. And as a hype girl, that's my goal in life, is to make sure that the authors I love get their books out there in front of other people so their books get read. So if I can help an author as an ARC reader by writing a review so that it posts on or before publication date, and then people I know who like to read the same things I read see it and say, I'm going to go grab it right now, that's helping that author out. So I want to help that author out by putting that ARC up there. And I want the credit for reading the book on my list of books that I've read. I've read it. I've deserved it. I got it. So I count my ARCs. I do not always count beta reads. Usually I do, but I count them as part of the ARC process, not as a second read. So if I beta read a book, which I do that for some authors, which beta reading is the step kind of before and during the editing, proofreading, when there's still a lot of development going on. The book has been written, and it's a select group of people who read that are the author's honest eyes, I want to say. These are people who are the first ones that are kind of counted on to find the plot holes, to give feedback to the author on, this is great, this doesn't mesh, I feel like something's missing here. It's not really part of the editing process, but it kind of is. It's a unique thing all to itself, and not all authors use beta readers. Again, it's an author's prerogative on how they choose to write, edit, and publish. But if I happen to be beta reading for an author and then I read the ARC of the same book as well, I don't count that as a reread. I count it as one read, because a lot of things can change between beta reading and ARC reading. And that ARC read is what I count as reading the book for publication. So that brought up another question in my mind about actually rereading a book. Do you count rereads as reading in your book count? Because I do reread books a lot. I love a comfort read. I love my comfort novels. Rereads for me are when I'm in a book slump and nothing's hitting right, I go back to a favorite reread, a favorite read, and reread it. Reread it. There are books I have read upwards of six times because I love them, because I've connected with them in some way, because they are comfortable to me. Sometimes when I read a particularly difficult book, I like to go back and read a book that I know exactly what's going to happen. I am not an angsty reader, meaning I don't like books that have a lot of angst in them, but I do like to read them occasionally because they shake things up for me. I don't want to get comfortable in my reading, so every now and then I look for an angsty read. And I have authors who I love that I know are angsty authors, and I will find them, read them, and then I have a comfort read right afterwards. And that comfort read might be a brand new book by a rom-com author, or a reread. So, for example, Samantha Christie is one of my favorite angsty writers. She writes really deeply emotional reads that have a lot of angst in them. Catherine L. Evans is another author who has very deeply emotional books. Her characters are deeply emotional characters. Their storylines are deeply emotional. I wind up with major book hangovers from these two authors. And usually after I read one of their books, I am looking for a comfort read. Sometimes the comfort read is in the form of a brand new book by Kaylee Loring, Pippa Grant, Janice Whitaker, authors that I know are going to be less angsty and either more on the comedic side, the rom-com side, in the case of Kaylee Loring and Pippa Grant, or maybe some romantic suspense where the conflict isn't between the characters, the main characters, so the angst isn't so high. The conflict is an external one. So it does create a suspense level, but it's not an angst level for me. I know things are going to turn out fine between the characters in all these books, but in some books, I'm like, I got to skip to the last chapter and make sure. That's my Samantha Christie, Catherine L. Evans. So I look for a comfort read. But sometimes that comfort read is a reread. Sometimes it's Reckless Miles by Claire Kingsley. I think I have read that book six, seven, maybe eight times. I love that book so much. And I will dive into it when I need a book that I adore, that I love, that I know how it's going to go. And I just need to sink into something that is a phenomenal read that is going to help me bridge between something that was difficult to read and something else that might be difficult to read. So that comfort read. Other comfort reads for me are, and I'm not saying they're not angsty or suspenseful books, because Samantha Cole is another one who writes romantic suspense. And I will often dive into her Trident series as what I would call a comfort read, just because I've read them so often, I know what's going to happen, but I love them so much, I dive back in. A.M. Johnson's Let There Be Light is another one that I'm, they're so good that they are so comfortable that I miss the characters so much that I want to dive back in to ground myself with characters I know really, really well. So those rereads, I count them. I even though I've read them before, I'm taking the time to sit and read them. So I'm counting them in my reading because they count. So we're going to say rereads count, no matter what the level. If it's a published book or an ARC that you read and then you read it when it was published, I'm going to say it counts. It counts for me. You can count it for you. If you need permission for that, I'm going to give it to you because I'm giving myself permission. So another one that came up recently that I thought was really interesting was novellas. And a reader friend of mine online, a bookish friend, recently mentioned that she tends to read novellas towards the end of the year when she's trying to tie up her last few reads to get to her annual reading goal, her book goal. And somebody else kind of thought it was cheating a little bit because she's counting a novella while someone else is counting a full-length novel. And I had to stop and think, well, why doesn't it count? You know, how do we feel about using novellas in the book count? So I'll get to my thoughts on that in a second, but I want to make sure that we are on the same page about what a novella is in general. So, little just clarity here on this. The difference between a novel, a novella, and a short story is quite simply the length. This is one of those times when size matters. So, a novel generally has around 15,000 words or more. You know, I am not going to quibble over 48,000 versus 50,000. If it's close to that 50K mark, I am going to consider it a novel. A novella ranges from about 30,000 to 50,000. Some people say 30 to 45,000. I'm going to call it that 30 to 48, 50,000 is a novella. A short story is anything from 1,500 to 30,000 words. So if you're into classifying things, there you go. Novel, 50K plus. Novella, 30 to 50K. Short story, 1,500 to 30K words. Are most people counting the words in the book before they read it? No, they're not. But for clarity's sake and classification's sake, I just want to make sure that we're on the same page with that. For me, I just want a good story. I don't care how many words it is. But for a long time, I really was reluctant to read novellas, so I didn't really read a lot of them. And then I started to think about why. Because in one of my recent author spotlight blog posts, I focused heavily on novellas because that was what I've read by the author I was spotlighting. And it got me to thinking back to why I was really reluctant at first to read a novella and where I am in my journey of reading novellas now. Now, I always considered novellas as little interludes, little breaks. The vast majority of the novellas that I had read were part of a longer series, but they were included within the series as a bridge. Brittany Shaheen in Dublin Nights, her first book is a full-length novel, and the second book is a novella. So On the Edge by Brittany Shaheen starts her Dublin Nights series, and then On the Line is a novella that goes right in between it. Wait, I might have those reversed. No, I think that's correct. On the Edge is the first one, and then On the Line is the novella. And it's considered a book two, but it's much shorter, and it bridges between the first book and the third book. So I read it because it was a bridge there. Samantha Cole, within her Trident Security series, has a number of novellas as well. And again, they are kind of bridges. They bring in other minor characters who may not have a full and complete story, but they have a story to tell. So I was reading novellas as an element of a larger picture. And when I found Ember Davis, I found her through reading one of her novellas because I was doing a book challenge. And the book challenge was to read a holiday book, a holiday story. And somebody in the group asked, can we read a novella? And everybody agreed that novellas were great for the challenge. So I started looking for a novella. And Ember Davis's A Very Pierced Christmas kept coming up over and over and over. And I was like, all right, if this one keeps popping up, there's got to be something with this that everybody's talking about it. This is where I'm going to start. So I started reading Ember Davis's A Very Pierced Christmas. It pulled me in so fast and held my attention from beginning to end, and it helped me get over some of the issues I was having about why I didn't want to dive into separate novellas. So thinking about that situation started making me think about other novellas, because part of my fear with a novella separately was that I was going to miss things, that there would be things left out, that it wouldn't be as satisfying as a full-length novel. And Ember really kind of proved me wrong with her novella, and then subsequent ones that I read, because what I have found for me is that a good novella, the right novella, will hit all the same points as a full-length novel, just on a shorter time frame, on a smaller scale. And it eliminated or alleviated a little bit of my stress about reading in general, because sometimes a novella turns out to be the perfect read. Because I can read a novella between two longer books. If I'm waiting for one book to come out after I finished another one, and I don't want to dive into a full-length novel, a novella is perfect. It's something that I can read in an hour and a half, 2 hours, versus the 6 hours that I usually take to read a full-length novel. And finding the novella from Ember during the holidays was really perfect, because the holidays are chaotic. I don't care what holidays you celebrate or if you don't celebrate anything at all. Holiday time frame can be really, really chaotic. There's so much that goes on. We travel. We have family things that are going on. Certain elements of work, if you work certain jobs, become more chaotic and more hectic. So having a novella to read can fill that gap, fill that space, and give you just as much of what you're looking for, just as much character development, just as much steam, just as much plot as a full-length novel, but in a shorter time frame, on a smaller scale, lengthwise, but have the same huge impact as a full-length novel. And I really do feel finding the right novella is really important for that. Now, the other thing I really love about novellas that I discovered with this is that oftentimes, if it's a separate novella not already built into an author's series, a lot of the novellas I found are tied within another series itself that's a thematic series. A Christmas novel or holiday novels. There was one that I found because of Ember. I've kind of followed her to the Dad Bod series in January, and that was so much fun. Man of the Month. These are all novellas. Sometimes there, I can't think of the series now, but I'll find it. Dark Romance. And what it did was it introduced me to a bunch of other authors, because even though Ember brought me into the series, while I was there, I read several other authors that I then discovered I liked their writing. I liked their style of writing. I liked their character development. I liked their tone, the language they used. And I was like, oh, okay, another author to read. And it really broadened my horizons, my mindset, my options. Instead of sitting down to read a full-length novel by someone, if I wasn't sure if I was going to connect, the novella helped me realize this was an author I could connect with. This was an author I wanted to read. And those collaboratives became really valuable for me in deciding who I wanted to read next in between arcs. So I also noticed that a lot of authors who write novellas pull characters from their other books, their full-length books and series, into their novellas. And reading that made me want to go back and read their other series, because I liked and connected to a character in the novella who wasn't a main character, was a minor character, who was in a different series by the author. So perfect advertising and tie-in. Big time props to those authors who do that, because now I want to go read the rest of the series that this minor character came from, because I liked them in this novella. So it was perfect. It led me to another series I wanted to read, and it worked out beautifully. So I know that there are always some things, there are some novellas I'm going to read that will leave me hanging and wanting, but I also know that there are some novels I've read that could have been novellas, but in the long run, I'm there for the story. So if it grips my attention, if it gives me a book hangover, if it makes me want to read more, the size doesn't matter. The length is not as important as the emotion and the feeling that comes with it. Sounds like a really good spot for that's what she said right there. So in the end, what's important to you when you decide how you're going to count what you read? And is it important to you to count what you read? Does it matter the length of the book, the length of the story? Does it matter if you've read it before and you're reading it again? Does it matter the format that you read it in? And here's where we can kind of segue into another one that I'll talk about later. Again, of the, we're going to have this discussion at some point, ebook versus paperback versus audiobook. I'm going to tell you right now, they all count. So if you want to count them in your count, I'm counting them in mine. It all counts. And are those reading streaks important to you? Why are they important to you? And how do you record them? So I am hoping that you will pop into the comments on the episode 11 podcast posts on my Instagram or Facebook page, or you can come check out the Discord server and join the conversation there. But I would really like to know, do you follow your reading streaks? Do you record what you read? How do you record, or where do you record what you read, and what do you count? So jump on over on Facebook and Instagram. You will find me at Brazen Bookworm. On Facebook, the full page is Brazen Bookworm's Unrighteous Reading Rebellion. On Instagram, it's just Brazen Bookworm. You can jump on over to TikTok. I'll have my August reads up pretty soon. We can see what we read that was the same. My August reads were way lower than my July reads because of the edits I was doing in August. Don't even care. I enjoyed everything I read and it was so worth it. And of course, you can jump into Discord as well. If you're on Discord, come find me there. It is a newer platform, so I'm still building it up, but I love the way it facilitates discussion and conversation. So I'd love to see you there. Remember, when you're looking for me, Brazen Bookworm, B-R-A-Y-Z-E-N, Bookworm, B-O-O-K-W-Y-R-M. Think wise like weird. And remember to pop into the blog site, brazensblog.com, for latest blog posts and book reviews, new stuff up on there. And if you're looking for one way to find everything, I have a direct me. So it's direct.me/brazenbookwormblog. So you can jump on there as well. If you want to send feedback but don't want to post on the comments, send me a direct message through Facebook or Instagram, or email me, brazenbookworm@gmail.com. That is it for today. I am so glad you've decided to pop in and join me on this latest adventure in podcasting, and I really can't wait to connect with y'all again.